Friday, August 29th, 2008, upon further review, episode number 62. This week we've got convention gaming, horror gaming, and zombie gaming. Well, okay, not so much gaming, but there are definitely zombies involved. But you've got nothing to worry about. Even zombies can't resist a good, healthy dose of opinions. Okay, upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And we want to welcome everyone back to episode 62, my dear. We're going to have a couple of interesting things on this episode, which some sort of came together. You know, it's an interesting thing that when we're doing the show, even though, as everyone out there knows, we generally try not to, you know, be thematic necessarily, with some little exceptions.
Or plan things ahead of time.
Or plan things ahead of time, other than listening to things that we're supposed to listen to and so on. But, you know, we don't try to have any master narrative. But as it happens, this show does have a theme, and it sort of segues nicely from one to the other. So just lucky, we guess. But, we want to thank everyone, as always, for listening and for sending in comments. And I just want to mention very quickly that I want to apologize for the spam situation. I mentioned this on the website, but we get hit by ridiculous amounts of spam, as I imagine most public websites do. I guess it's a measure of our popularity that we've now gotten 35,000 spam comments, Clea, have been caught by our filter. Yeah. And it's a little bit upsetting, frankly. But so we have a couple of combination spam filters that keep all of it from you guys, from having you guys having to see it. But every so often I go in and check the spam filter.
Isn't spam that thing that you used to eat when you go camping?
Yes.
Why have they called annoying things that we get in the mail spam?
I don't know the actual research as to why that would be the case. Because spam is something you won't want, so I like spam.
But it's not an annoying thing that I get in my mailbox.
It would be if people threw cans of it in your mailbox.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, spam is like...
You might actually like it if you found a can of spam in your mailbox?
Yeah, like if I lived in Hawaii, spam is like one of the choices of meats. Remember, it's bacon,
that's right,
sausage, or spam if you're in Hawaii. It's like a meal.
I know what to get you now for your birthday.
And in Gen Con, they were making whole little shapes. Like they had a little contest of making different sculptures out of spam.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, so it shouldn't be called spam.
I caught it like at the end of the day.
So these people
were just sitting there it had been sitting there all day on the table.
But that was...
I didn't see it at its prime, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate. That's interesting. So I think that we can... Spam, then, has even been ruined by these people. Even the luncheon meat has been ruined by this, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's
they
really
are really, really,
really bad
awful
people. So anyway, I ended up, when I emptied the spam filter the last time, I fouled something up. And so comments that were made in our last two episodes vanished. And so I really want to apologize
so
to the people
post
who
again.
Commented.
Please post again.
Please post again. Please, please, please. And don't forget also that you can contact us via our voicemail, on our website, and all those other ways that you can contact us as well. So my apologies that the comments are gone. But in any
Greg's
case...
Greg's comments when he did that were not family friendly, just to let you guys know.
Yes, that's correct. And they would have been caught by a spam filter had I sent them there. Because, yeah. So anyway. Okay, so for today, we have three things that we're going to review as per usual. And we're going to start by reviewing, as you might have gotten the impression from Clea's little story, Gen Con, which is a major game convention in Indianapolis. We got back from that maybe 2 weeks ago, I guess, Clea? Maybe 2.5 weeks ago?
No, and less than that.
Maybe less, I guess, a week and a half, I guess. And there's a lot of things to talk about in relation to that convention, and so we'll talk about that first. Then we're going to move on to talk about the board game Arkham Horror. Now, I swear this was an accident. I was thinking about, we played a lot of Arkham Horror at Gen Con, so that was the connection there, and we hadn't had a chance to discuss it on the show, so I thought it would be good to do that. But then this last thing that we're reviewing, as it turns out, was a podcast that was submitted to us by Will Ross, two of whose shows we reviewed previously, Smart Bomb Radio and then Barfly. And the last we heard from Will in that regard was in December of 2006. So Will wrote us back in March of 08, and I'm sorry, Will, that it's taken this long to get to it, and he sent us something basically saying, you've reviewed a few of my shows before, and I dig it, and I need some feedback on this new show of mine called 118 Migration. Now, I had no idea what the show was about. I just said, okay, that sounds good. So now that it popped up in the queue, I listened to it, and what should it be but a podcast about zombies and post-apocalypse?
It's a horror podcast.
So how perfect is that? Horror game, horror podcast, and a gaming convention. It's all one nice through line. So
actually, it's a potty book, right?
Not, yeah, he calls it a patio book / audio drama, which,
right, very nice.
Yes, and there was even some discussion of patio books at Gen Con, so it all fits together.
All full circle, the circle of life.
Upon Further Master Narrative, episode one. Anyway, so let's begin then with Gen Con. And you can find information about Gen Con at www.gencon.com.
Right.
Gen Con is a game convention which was originally founded back, I think, in the late 1970s or maybe the 1980s by Gary Gygax, who was the founder of Dungeons & Dragons and who actually recently passed away a couple of months ago, I believe. And he started a bit kind of in his backyard, to be honest, and then it just got larger and larger and larger, and now it's gotten to the point where every year it is the largest, best-attended gaming convention in the world. I think, actually, it says for nearly 40 years, which is even longer than I thought it was. But 26,000 people came last year. I believe this year it was around 27,000 people, so lots and lots of people. And all of them come to attend this gaming convention, which both demos new games, especially like board games and things like that, mm-hmm. but there are also video games from World of Warcraft to new role-playing games,
but
all sorts of things.
The electronics convention that we've reviewed.
Digital Life, right?
It is very minimal on the video games. There's usually only, I'd say, about 3 to 5
displays
on, yeah, video games. The majority of it is games.
Although, this time, you forget that this time there was a video game simulator that they were demoing that had on it Galaga. And you'll recall that I brought Galaga to its knees with my plus 100,000 score. Do you remember that?
I don't think that contradicts what I was saying, but I know that you needed to segue into that.
I just wanted to point that out, that one of those 3 to 4 displays was something which I brought to its knees.
Yeah, we entered the convention hall, and normally I know that it's going to be slow going as there's numerous things to catch Greg's attention and bring him to a halt, but we barely went 5 feet, and the first exhibit right to our left was Galaga, and mm-hmm. at that point I just kept walking because I knew that he would be there pretty much until they told him to leave, because he wasn't going to die.
That's not true. I did die, but I didn't. In fact, I said afterwards, the guy said, "Oh, I finally got someone who can play this game." I said, "That's right. All the old quarters didn't go to waste back in the 80s. Anyway, but the majority of the convention, of course, is about board games, as Clea said, and I shouldn't say just board games, but gaming, board games. Also miniatures, art, and books. And I actually went in large part for professional reasons. That part of the convention went much better even than I thought it would, actually. I ended up meeting a lot of authors. The editor for my book, which is coming out next year, The Third Sign, I actually met him originally at Gen Con when we went in 2005, before we even started Upon Further Review, actually.
Right.
And he was here again, so I had a chance to have dinner with him and with Jim Hines, who's the author and a friend, the author of Goblin Quest and the other Goblin series. He has a new book coming out called The Stepsister Scheme, which I may end up having Clea look at to review, because I think it looks like something she might be up her alley. And so Jim started with...
Because it's about a woman?
No, it's about three fairy tale princesses like Charlie's Angels. The premise is like Snow White and all, but assuming they were Charlie's Angels.
Oh, so, kind of like from Shrek.
Right, yeah, but exactly. Kind of in that principle. But it's got Jim's usual blend of humor and quick-paced action. Jim was a 5-star author. My book is also coming out from 5-star. And then moved from there into a larger mainstream publisher. And so I've talked to him a lot about his process of publication and building his career. So anyway, I met Jim there. I had dinner with him and with John Helfers and with another 5-star author, Paul Jeunesse. And I met Pat Rothfuss, who may be doing a blurb for my book. And it just lots and lots of people there. So on the art side, I was able to find possibly some art for the cover of my book. It was very, very good professionally.
So in the end, it is a con. So you'll have the same people that would be attending all the major cons.
Right.
And all the minor cons. It's an opportunity to get together with like-minded people,
yep,
wear their outfits, and
are there outfits.
I don't know how many cons there are. You know, I swear...
There are lots.
There's almost one every weekend.
Yeah, well, I've started doing some research on it for reading purposes, and, you know, I'm trying to focus mine on ones that have a literary focus or have a significant literary arm.
Right.
But there are, yeah, I mean, almost every weekend. And back in the 1980s, when I was playing D&D with friends, when I first got into it at the age of 9 or 10 or something like that, there were some, you know, and Gen Con, of course, was still around, but not to the same degree. I mean, it really has exploded, where there's a convention almost every weekend, and there are some people for whom this is kind of a near weekly occurrence where they just travel from place to place. And you can see why. I mean, as everyone knows, Clea and I love games. And if you had the chance to spend time with people, that why wouldn't you do that?
So. I mean, it's kind of one of those things of what happens when geeks, at least right now, until the bubble bursts, when they grow up, they become electronics. Most of them are in the electronics and they make good money doing that.
That's
and they
true.
Don't have social lives, so they don't spend money anyplace else. So they just have money to burn.
Wide swath generalizations. Yes, I suppose that's true. Yeah, and there are, as Clea said, there's a lot of costumes here as well. There are a lot
of panels.
I said
outfits. I didn't call them costumes.
Well, I'm going to call them costumes. Well, no, even people who did it, I mean, it's called cosplayers. You know, people who wear costumes are often called cosplayers.
Okay.
And they, you know, it's designed to see how well they look. New York Comic Con is very similar to this as well. So there is a good deal of that. I'd say that there's a little bit more of the medieval theme, perhaps, to this. Or I should say, it feels a little bit more D&D-y than science fiction-y, but that's a broad generalization. You still see stormtroopers
and
people.
The comic characters
anime stuff.
In
that's
the
true.
Anime, so.
And this convention, I should say, I mean, it is huge. There are all the panels that I mentioned on authors and books and things like that, which I spent a lot of time on. But there are, you know, there are board games everywhere. There's gaming sessions going on at all hours of the day and night.
There's magic being
there's
played
magic
until
tournaments.
Like 5 a.m. in the morning.
Our friend Justin rolled out World of Warcraft miniatures game, which is going to be huge. So there was a huge display at Upper Deck. Justin is the lead designer for that game, so we'd like to give that a plug. I actually had a chance to beta test that a couple of years ago. So, I mean, everything is going on at this convention, and there are, you know, contests and things like that. So, and even when you go back to the hotel, as we often did, because we had Senevine with us, so, you know, Senevine and her daughter would be in the room sleeping, and we'd leave the door ajar, and we were playing games with our friends outside the hotel room, and that a lot of people are doing that. So, it really is this kind of big, long gaming fest over the course of 4 days.
And really well planned, I have to say. Really well organized. Like
yeah.
They even had, because they take over all of Indianapolis, so they have,
yep.
They even had a hotel room basement that was set up just for people to play games
yep.
and drink and have, you know, bar food. So it's really well planned. They really know their customer.
I imagine Indiana, you know, I was thinking about this. On the one hand, Indianapolis probably is sort of looks askance at some of the people who...
Well, you don't know that. You're just presuming that.
Well, I'll presume it because of one story I'll tell quickly in a minute. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, these people tend not to party, you know, extreme. I mean, they're too busy playing games, right? So, in a way, these people, I imagine, they think this is great. They get a lot of people with disposable income to hang out.
Who
and as long
as trash the city.
And they don't go and trash the city. You know, it's not,
yeah.
So it's not that big a deal. But I wanted to say, the convention center where this is all held is linked to the
it's
Indianapolis Dome, where the Hoosier Dome, where the Colts play, the football team plays. And a couple of years ago, when we went to this convention the first time, you had all these people.
There was a game going.
There was a game going on. It was a preseason game. And so you had this big corridor that linked the two buildings. And so down the one corridor were all these people dressed in, you know, vampire outfits and stormtroopers and Jedi and you know, strange Pokemon things, you know, all that kind of stuff, all wearing their costumes going down the one side. And then coming down the other direction were all these people with, you know, blue face paint and Peyton Manning jerseys and, you know, foam fingers. And they pass each other in the hallway. And I kid you not, we were there when this happened. And both groups, as they were passing, were looking at the other group, you know, sort of talking to them, look at those people. What the heck's wrong with those weirdos? Oh, it was cracking me up. It just shows you that your own version of geekdom depends on, you know, from where you sit, you know.
Yeah, but I do think it was interesting how each group had their own costume and makeup.
Yes.
Normally you wouldn't think about that as football fans. You know, they think they're real men, but in the end they just have costumes and makeup just
yeah.
like anyone else.
It's just socially acceptable geekdom, you know, that's all.
This year there was no preseason game. However, what there was the new stadium had opened and they had sent all the season ticket holders free tickets to come and just stand on the stadium grounds. So you still had all the fans walking by. This time they were walking by all day because they were
right.
coming and going the whole day to check out the stadium. So
well, that's funny.
There was plenty of opportunities for the myriad of costumed and makeuped individuals to be passing each other on the street.
But people are pretty nice there, though, on
oh,
the
yeah,
whole. I mean,
people, nice.
People, no one has any real problems, I think.
Yeah, and it's not like these football fans don't have kids that love Star Wars. So,
you right,
know,
well,
there's
true,
plenty
too.
Of them that walked through the convention center just to see the full-size working C-3PO.
Right,
know?
That's true. Oh, that's true. And the R2-D2 that was zooming around. That was pretty neat, too. So, and there was no visible person controlling it. So, I mean, sure there was somebody nearby.
Yeah, there was a full-size R2-D2 and then the red one as well.
Right, that's right.
And yeah, I don't know how
most people, and they would talk to it, and R2-D2 would kind of turn his head and beep, and then he'd move around, and, you know, that was kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, I don't know how it was going.
So the very well organized, as Clea said, very good for me professionally, and overall it was a good time. The drawback, I mean, there are a couple drawbacks. Are one, it is very large, so if you're looking
for a bit overwhelming.
Yeah, if you're looking for a more intimate experience, this is not it. You know, it's 27,000 people, many of whom come for all 4 days. Some people will come just on Saturday and Sunday. And so if you come on Thursday and Sunday, those days I think are a little bit less busy. Mm-hmm. But Saturday is certainly packed because everyone who comes for just one day, they're all there in addition to all the other people. So I never felt like it was so crowded that you couldn't move. But especially when you're going through the big exhibition hall where there are all the demos and everything else, that takes some doing, especially when you got a stroller, by the way.
Right. And there's definitely hundreds of thousands of activities and different things, but many of them do fill up. So, you know, it's not a matter of you can all the time just drop right in. Sometimes you do need to plan ahead on certain activities if you want to be able to actually do them.
And you can order ahead. For example, one of the events that always gets filled up is this thing called True Dungeon, which is where you go through this kind of a real dungeon maze where you go through different rooms and there are real props. And in this last one, there was a real animatronic hill giant, which was kind of neat looking. So you go through that, and that's very popular. And that's something which if you didn't sign up for beforehand, you wouldn't get in because it's just, you know, extremely popular.
Well, you can go on a wait list. Maybe you'll get lucky for tickets.
Yeah, but the best sort of guaranteeing it is if you go on before, which you can do at their website. So the size can be a drawback. The other drawback is that it's not cheap. I mean, it's reasonably cheap, I suppose, if you get a four-day pass. It's not that bad to just get admission to the center itself.
Right.
But when you combine that with hotel costs and then, I mean, these are gamers, right? Now, I think I should get some credit in the sense that I think behaved myself and only bought two games.
You did very well this year, honey.
But it was very hard for me because there were lots of cool things. And
friends, you know, are two responsible adults. And what they do is they budget for this every year.
Right.
And so they give you
responsible adults
a budget, and so they know how much they can spend, and then you know they decide when they want to go a little bit over. But yeah, no, it definitely needs to be budgeted. I mean, Indianapolis is not one of the most expensive towns,
no.
But I think you're still going to be dealing with $100 to $200 a night hotel room,
right? Even at their conference rate, so to speak,
right? And you know, most games, unfortunately, you know, they're not marked down during this convention, so they're going to run you about $50 a pop,
right? There's some that are like card games that are cheaper, but you know, yeah.
It's a rarity.
And if you, for example, if there's a costume that you think is neat or a really cool looking jacket or something, I mean, that can be hundreds and hundreds of dollars. So, so it's not cheap and the price can sort of run up on you relatively quickly.
Right.
But, you know, other than those two things, I mean, both of those things are almost, you know, if you know that going in, it's less likely to be a drawback. You know, I mean, if you know it's
big, plan for it.
And if you know that it's going to be expensive, you can plan ahead. It's not like they hit you out of left field and you think, wait, I was told this. And, you know, it's very straight ahead. And some of the things that they have, I mean, for example, they have a big room, which is just called the Board Game Library, where you can just go in and take out board games. And they have hundreds and hundreds. And then you just get to play it for free. So if you think about it in those terms, that's pretty neat. And, you know.
And I would, that leads me into what I wanted to say, is that I would highly recommend doing this with a group of friends.
Yeah, definitely.
Because even within 27,000 other people, you can feel pretty alone if you don't have anyone to play a game with.
That's right.
And you want to go and have people to do things with.
I think that's a good slogan, Claire. There's nobody who's more alone than a person in 27,000 without a game to play.
Without a person to play a game with. It takes too long. That was too long. It can't be a slogan when it takes like three sentences
to say.
That's
what makes it even more lonely.
But yeah, that's something to consider. And also something I think that people can be a little cliquish. I don't think people are going to be going out and coming up to you and saying, you want to play a game with us? I mean, unfortunately, again, the social situations, the way they can be, I don't see that happening. But, you know, might be surprised.
So anyway, assuming that you know what you're getting into, I think it's a good time. So,
yeah.
Rating?
8.
Yeah, I think that's what I would have said as an 8. Again, if you know what you're getting into. Now, there are going to be some people who don't play games at all. And if you do, why are you listening to our show?
That's why I was hesitating, because I was saying, again, for what it is, for who the audience is, I think it's highly successful.
Yep.
I mean, we had our issues with True Dungeon this year, but they really, really take into consideration people's feedback and are constantly changing it, constantly revamping it. So, I mean, it really is again, I think highly planned by the people that are the customers themselves and so really know the customer.
I should also say that earlier this year, the Gen Con organizers, the Gen Con declared bankruptcy, and then they had to got, you know, rescued and all these things happened. I think they're currently owned by Wizards of the Coast, but Gen Con has had some financial difficulty, and I don't know how that's working out, but there were lots of people there this year, so I would assume that they're still all full speed ahead as far as I can tell.
Maybe they just don't know, the people in charge
don't know how to do finances.
Yeah, maybe.
Could be. That would get us into Wizards of the Coast, which I won't get into because I guarantee you they don't know about finances, but in any case, yeah, I would agree. Gen Con's a lot of fun, and if you have a chance to do it, it normally runs in the middle 2 weeks, I think, or I'm sorry, the middle week of August.
It's like always on our anniversary.
Okay, so it's right around our anniversary. So if you have a chance to check it out, you should. So we would give it an 8 out of 10. Okay, the second thing up for review is the board game Arkham Horror. Now, as we mentioned, we played this at Gen Con. This is a game that we had previously owned, actually.
And tried to play twice.
Well, we played it a couple times. We played it successfully, and then we played it once with other people, and they weren't a big fan. So you can find information about this. It's by a company called Fantasy Flight Games. And you can find this at Fantasy Flight Games, FantasyFlightGames.com/Arkham Horror, ArkhamHorror. And Arkham Horror is based on the work of H.P. Lovecraft, who's a famous horror writer of the early 20th, actually late 19th century even, who wrote a bunch of works about Cthulhu and these alien races that were in the nether regions of the world waiting to devour us. Very uplifting stuff, Lovecraft. And the interesting thing is that I'm not a horror fan at all. I don't like horror movies, I don't like horror games, and I don't like super depressing post-apocalyptic things anyway. It's not my thing. I don't write like that, and I'm not really interested in a lot of stories about that. But I do like really good game mechanics. And one of the things that's great about Arkham Horror is that it's a cooperative game. You're all playing collectively against the game. Basically, you're playing the game to try to keep this ancient creature from awakening and devouring the town. And everyone who plays one of, you know, something like 16 different characters, more if you get the expansions, is working together to keep that from happening. And I love cooperative games. If I could play all my games cooperative, I probably would, because I think that always provides the most sort of fun in that kind of an environment.
At Gen Con, I saw a hat on it, Arkham CSI.
Oh, that's cute. There was another shirt I saw, too, which was Vote Cthulhu, who's if you're tired of the lesser of two evils. I thought that was pretty cute. Okay. So there's all that. Also, Arkham Horror was originally a game produced by a company which I can't remember anymore, and Fantasy Flight, when it got a hold of it, as is typical for Fantasy Flight, really put a lot of money into the components, into the cards, so it's a very kind of bright-looking board, and all the cards are very neat-looking, and all the components are very cool, and all that sort of thing. There are a lot of components, and a lot of pieces and a lot of different things.
Yes.
And that is one of the drawbacks of the game, as we'll talk about. But one of the great things about the game is that in each game, a lot of it works differently because you're working with other people based on their strengths. One of the characters is a professor, for example, who has a very high rating of sanity. He's not driven crazy by the things he sees, or not as likely to be, but he's extremely weak. And so if any creature hits him physically, that makes him very difficult for him to survive. There are other people who are the opposite of that and are very strong, but you know, have the brain of a snail, and if they see anything that even seems vaguely frightening, will immediately go crazy. So
I think that the mechanics can be learned and can be learned and can not overwhelm the game.
Right.
But there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think at least half of them, though, are necessary in order to make the game as flexible and as constantly new as it is. You know, playing it now, I think we played it 5 times, you know, lots of different things happen where you think you're going good and then you don't, or
yep.
You think you're going awful and then you win.
Yep.
And different cards come up, different characters and enemies come up. And so it is an ever-changing game, and I'm sure if we played it 100 times, by then we will have probably played out all the different options.
And we'd also be 60 if we played it 100 times.
And then get the expansion. However, this, as I said, going back to the weight of the game, as Greg would in his famous video podcast for Boing Boing, would say that this game, you know, must be great because it's really heavy. And for someone to really appreciate that, you have to be a real gamer. And so I think for someone to really appreciate this, you either have to be a real gamer or have real patience. It takes a bit of time to set it up, and it takes each turn has multiple different things that need to happen in a particular order.
And you have to catch each other. You know, you'll have to say, did you remember to do that? Because it's
and
very hard for one person to remember it all.
And when you have a sleep deprived, it can take a little bit more time.
It sounds autobiographical and tonically, is that true?
You know, and you have a sleeping baby that you're trying to make sure you don't wake up. It can be a little bit difficult to stay on track and making sure that you follow all the rules. But, you know, when you have people that are gamers that appreciate a game, it can be a fun game because it's a real story that is unfolding as you're playing the game, but without the annoying narrative cards or without a lot of time-consuming aspects that can make it have to be like that.
That's right. Although it should be said that, and this is my big beef with the game. I think that despite the fact that I like the mechanic, there are too many things going on. I think that some of them could be cut back.
Right.
The other problem is that it just takes too long. There is no chance that a non-gaming family will ever play this game because it just takes too long. We've only, I think, ever completed two games. You know, every other game we had to stop.
Oh yeah.
And granted, part of that is because we started at like 6 or 7. But I mean, you really would have to start this game at 2 or 3, and then you might finish it by like 8 or 9. This is not a short game.
I know, but your favorite game is whatchamacallit, which takes like
Talisman?
5 months to finish.
That, no, but it's Talisman. Yeah, but that's just because of there's so many neat things going on, and because it doesn't. I mean, this takes that long just to sort of get through the rules half the time.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
So I do think it's not a game that will work well with everybody. I think there are games that we've talked about before, like Wise and Otherwise, that everyone, even non-gamers, will enjoy.
Right.
This is not one of those games. This is a game that you really have to be a gamer to really like and appreciate. There are a lot of expansions as well that are available, some of which I may check out eventually down the road. But, you know, the principle of Arkham Horror, I think, is a really good one. And everyone that we've played it with that is a gamer really likes it and thinks that there's, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, our two friends at Gen Con really liked it. The gamer friends that we played it with here liked it. The non-gamer friends didn't, but the gamer friends that we played it with here liked it. And so it is a game which I think would be interesting to try out and take a look at. It, again, is not cheap either. I don't remember the exact price. I want to say maybe $35 or $40. I mean, it's not super expensive, too. Let's keep in mind that most, you know, PlayStation games you get or computer games are going to cost $50 and up. So it's not like these board games are more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then you certainly get a very high-quality product which will hold together for a long time.
Yeah, no, it's a really well-made game.
You can even play it solo, by the way, which I think is a little bit scary. Maybe when you're in Seattle, I'll give it a try and see if I can beat them by myself. But anyway, so very good game for gamers, not so good for non-gamers. Some drawbacks, but in general, a very ambitious effort that I think generally works.
Right, and again, the theme is like, what would you say, like 18th century kind of characters.
Mm-hmm. Very much set in
Lovecraft's
world.
And ghouls and
you have Tommy
zombies.
You have like Tommy guns. I think it's early 20th century. You have Tommy guns and things like that, but you don't have, you know, nuclear weapons. I mean, it's not a modern time frame, and that sort of fits in it as well. This is also, by the way, not family friendly. Not that there's swears or anything like that, but the themes of it are disturbing.
I mean,
it's a horror game.
It's a horror game.
So it's not for kids, but it is a fun game to try out.
It is called Arkham Horror.
It is called Arkham Horror. So that ought to be something. I would say this is a 7 out of 10 for me. Do you want to say a 7 or a 6? I could go to 6 too if you want.
Yeah, it's really hard for me. I might want to go with a 6.
Okay, I'm perfectly willing to do that. 6 out of 10 because of the complication of setup. Oh, you also need a lot of room, let me just say. You need a big table.
Yeah.
And when you get the expansions, some of which have extra boards, then I think you just need a floor, really. If you could just get a floor.
Of a house.
That would be great.
Okay.
But it is a game that you can leave set up and come back to, which Clea and I have done a couple times.
If you have the space.
So that's if you have the space, yeah.
And don't leave in a small apartment in the Bronx.
And don't.
And just have a child.
And don't have a dog.
That can knock the table over.
Right, okay. So anyway, so we give Arkham Horror a 6 out of 10 and check it out if you get a chance.
Moving on the horror theme, takes us to our final thing that we're reviewing.
So completely accidentally, as it turns out, this show, the podcast we're reviewing today, is a horror show. Who would have thunk it? And as I said, this was brought to us by Will Ross, who has produced good stuff before. And it'd been a while since we'd heard from him. It turns out he'd been doing stuff with Grammar Girl, whose podcast we've also reviewed, and some other things as well. And now he's back doing this.
Will Ross here, and I want to talk to you all about 118 Migration, the new horror audio drama from the guys who brought you Smart Bomb Radio. Well, not so much tell you as show you.
Outside the house, the dark thing slammed against the front door, screaming at her, growling and snapping. She laughed at his rage, long and deep and mocking.
Check it out at 118.libsyn.com or search for us on iTunes.
Now, when we reviewed Barfly, as I recall, we liked Barfly because Barfly was a series of stories, kind of film noir-esque almost stories, I guess just noir-esque stories. And I think he's taken a little bit of that in this production.
The simplicity of that.
This is found, it's called 118 Migration, and you can find this at 118 spelled out. So oneeight.libsyn.com.
We haven't had a Libsyn podcast in a while.
No, it's been a little while. That's right.
That used to be all the thing we were reviewing.
Yeah, well, because podcasting is getting more mature, so everyone's trying all these different things now, I guess. But Libsyn is still a good one. And 118 Migration is, as it describes itself, a post-apocalyptic podcast adventure of zombies and madness. I find this interesting because the show, essentially, and this is supposed to release about once a week, and then they took a break, and now season two has just started a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And each episode runs from about a half hour to maybe 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And is based around this guy who has survived a sort of zombie, I won't say zombie invasion, but it's one of those things where people all change into zombies.
It's his journal.
It's his journal talking about...
The journal's found later on by someone.
Do you know that?
That's how it starts. It describes this other guy found this journal. This journal was brought onto the wherever he is by a zombie before it was killed.
Oh, I missed
that. And he's reading the journal.
Oh, okay.
And so then what's happening is we're hearing the author of the journal reading in the... Well, just say kind of the first person as he's writing the journal.
Oh, so he's already a zombie. So we're to assume he's a zombie already.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of what I presume, but we don't know. And so in the background, here Greg goes. It's
typical. Oh, great.
He lost his little bit of hope.
Yeah,
nothing
so it's
to
all,
live for.
So it doesn't matter. It's all,
oh, honey,
all everyone's going to be dead.
Anyway, so in the background, you have, when he's reading his journal, you hear like the scribbling of him writing it and this kind of a heartbeat sound.
And then this freaky music, yeah.
And it's not just him also talking. Whenever in the journal he writes like what someone else said, there's another actor who's speaking that voice.
And, you know, there are some sound effects thrown in here and there, but a lot of it is really just, you know, and I don't know if it's Will who's the narrator or not, but Will I know is the sound guy. I don't think so, actually. I think it's another person narrating. A lot of it is just the narrator going through and reading.
Right.
And I have to say, you know, I was, when this first started, I was kind of like, you know. I was surprisingly compelled by it. I thought that the writing was pretty well done.
Yep. Well, I thought the writing was smart. Actually.
Yeah, the writing was smart.
As
I thought there was
English
a lot
professor,
of.
I think you would have appreciated it.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, it's kind of basic zombie stuff, and a lot of it is sort of, you know, Resident Evil. There's so many zombies. I mean, as they say, all of this kind of dates back to the movie Night of the Living Dead. But if you've ever watched Army of Darkness, or it's all classic zombies looking for brains, and they get mutated by some virus or something, and then they kill everybody. You know, that kind of thing is sort of standard zombie fare. But I think what makes this interesting is that as he's going through, he's sort of talking about the personalities of the people in this small town in South Dakota. And so it's not just about zombies themselves, but kind of
it's
about
not
these
an
people
action
that are
flick,
in.
Right.
Right.
It's a guy telling, it's his personal journal telling what's going on with
about
him
what has happened
and
as
what's
well.
Thinking, what he's thinking about it and how it's affecting him. And so, yeah, I think it's that. That what I was saying before, I didn't mean to say simple isn't simple-minded. It's the simplicity of it that makes it clear and I think interesting. And then added the, I think it's well-directed, well-edited, makes it, I think, a good listen.
Yeah, and I think it is very well edited. I mean, Will has been a pretty good audio guy for a while, but it really is very well put together. I think it's, and it works exactly as an audio book as you would intend it to be.
Right.
And if you really, really like the zombie stuff, you'll absolutely love it. Even if you don't like zombie stuff, I think that there is a lot about the writing and the sort of production that you'll like quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's positive as well. It's funny, at the end of every episode, Will talks a little bit about some of the challenges that he faced as the sound guy in the episode before, and at one point he used the term "I am made up of suck and fail," which is just very funny, and a lot of the stuff that
it's not family friendly because he uses the F-bomb.
Yes, like. It is not family friendly. That's true. There's a lot of that throughout the. Well,
both
it wouldn't be family friendly anyway because it's about zombies. You know,
I guess that's true.
So, and they have bloopers and things like that.
I'm not overly fond of this man's voice because I think he sounds a little young. But, I mean, it doesn't ruin it for me.
Yeah. There were two issues for me. One issue was I didn't buy it a little bit. I don't buy the... A part of the reason that I don't buy the voice is it's far too... oh, well, this is this nice thing I'm talking about.
Maybe that's,
one episode
true.
Is told while I believe he's sitting in a bathroom and he's writing his journal while this zombie is trying to knock open the door. I do not believe that someone would sit there and just go, so anyway, back when I was a kid, you know, no, I didn't believe it. And if it was possible that the character could have been made into somebody, I didn't get there. So I don't agree with the sort of laid back feel of it.
It's a director's decision, I believe, to have him, like, he didn't want to make it sound like in one of the bloopers, he says he doesn't want to make it sound like he's reading, but I guess it also doesn't, there's no emotion that's coming through.
Right.
But I think that's because he's writing it and there is an act of distancing that comes from him putting it in the journal. When it goes to the people interjecting voices of other characters, there is emotion and acting that
that's expressed in it. Yeah,
there.
I suppose.
So yeah, no, I think that flat, almost flat affect to his reading might be what's turning me off as well. I'm not sure. But again, that's a directorial decision. And again, it didn't ruin it for me.
No. It just was something that I thought for me was a little bit of a drawback. The other thing I thought was, although I found the bloopers and all that stuff very funny, I think that Will should not apologize quite so much. I mean, Will spends a lot of time saying, oh, and then this didn't work, and this didn't go right, and there's two reasons why I don't think you should do that. Number one,
at the end of every episode?
At the end of every episode. And there's two reasons that I don't think you should do that. One, I think that it's not accurate. I mean, I think that most of the stuff he's referring to about what he didn't send to whom and all this stuff, that stuff which doesn't affect our understanding of it. And that's the issue with number two. And number two, which is more important, is it's a bad idea to let people behind the curtain, especially when you do it too early. If you're a writer who's being interviewed, and I know this because I've been interviewed for my books, and someone asks you, you know, what were you thinking about this or what were you thinking about that, I'm happy to talk about that. But if somebody asks you, well, at this stage, you know, what did you think about this? And I started saying, well, yeah, I meant to do this, but I really screwed up when I put together that scene. All of a sudden, it's like I've taken you behind the movie set, and you see all the scaffolding and all the nails that aren't put in quite right, and all the tape and duct tape.
Yeah,
and no one wants to see that. And
I think part of the reason he's doing it, though, is it's the quintessential podcast of talking to your audience.
I mean, but like, not necessary. I mean, this is a audio book.
I agree with that. But I'm saying I think that's because he's kind of a podcaster at heart and hasn't made that transition.
Oh, hasn't made the transition, I see.
As into what it is that this truly is.
I just wouldn't sell himself short. It's better than he's arguing it is,
well,
it almost seems like, you know what I mean?
That as well, yes. So. But again, you're kind of being nonchalant and that little opportunity to talk to your audience.
I guess so.
I could see why he wants to do it. But yeah, I mean, we would encourage you, if you wanted to have it purely just be the patio audio. And if you want to speak a little bit about what the feedback that you're getting from people, that'd be cool. But I would even say he doesn't need to do that.
You could do maybe a couple of announcements. And I think it's okay to do bloopers like after each season. You know, you do a reel of bloopers where you kind of go through all this stuff. I think that's fine. But I don't think you need to do it after every show. And I don't think you need
to do bloopers in the show. But you mean like speaking about what's going on and the workings
show. He also does bloopers occasionally. I would not do any of that until the end of the season. And then he can talk about the workings of the show, the bloopers. And the fans that you top will be happy to listen to that. It's like watching a director's cut of a movie. But no one wants watching a director's cut to stop every 5 seconds and go, you know, it was terrible about this scene until after they've seen the movie for the first time. So I thought that there was a lot of that kind of broke me personally out of the immersive aspect of the show. But other than that,
what do you think about him giving a little tease of the next week?
I like that. I think that's a good idea. And I like the sort of continuity from place to place that it provides, especially for people who are only getting it through the feed. One thing I wanted to mention about the website that just struck me, there are different, there's a list of episodes and promos and different things like that. And it's fine. It's a sort of Libsyn page. So there's nothing spectacular, but it's functional. But on each show, like they have a couple of things where they have the show posting and then comments. The comments are written in this extremely dark text on a black background so that you literally can't read it unless you highlight it with your mouse. And I understand the whole, you know, it's dark, see, and it's dark. But I mean, really, you need to see the comments. So I think that's something which ought to be corrected. But otherwise, I think it's perfectly functional and it certainly gets people to the site that they need to. I don't really know why 118 is the show name, but I guess we would know more about that if we listened. We listened to about 3 episodes, and I guess if we listened to all the episodes, that would start to come clear to us. But in general, though, I think there's a lot of good stuff going on in the show. I think it's very well put together, and even though I don't like zombies and post-apocalyptic and all that, I still thought that this was well constructed and put together. So
yeah, bravo for
good job
getting Greg to like it when he refuses usually.
Because I am open-minded, despite the fact I don't like post-apocalyptic zombies.
Open-minded. Oh, yeah, yeah, yes, open-minded. I was going to say, the reason you don't like them is because you're idealistic and hate anything that's
No, that's not true. There's some stuff that in my music or my writing that has elements of darkness to it. It's just that I don't see the point of reading a book in which the point is...
Is dark. Because we've been talking a lot about everyone's overusing the concept dark.
We should review the concept of dark. Well, no, the thing about Cthulhu is there's a role-playing game based on this. And do you know that the whole thing in the game is you are guaranteed to go insane? And the whole game is just how long before you go insane. That you can't not go insane. Uh-huh. And I just was kind of like, this is the most pointless game I've ever heard of. So that's why I don't like post-apocalyptic scenarios where if you win, you get to confront a Holocaust. Great. You know, no thanks. But nevertheless, this is very well put together and artistically good, and this is good stuff, very, very well produced. So rating, I would say 8.
Okay.
You agree?
Yeah.
So 8 out of 10 for 118 Migration. 118:migration. Good stuff. And check it out and let us know what you think.
Yeah.
So that's going to do it for us for this week, our sort of semi-Halloween episode. I don't really know how we got there with all this horror stuff, but just happened to work out that way. And we will be back to you.
We're early.
Yeah, I guess we're early. That's true. So we'll be back to you guys in a couple of weeks. Clea is going to be going off to Seattle for a couple of weeks. And when she gets back, we're going to record another show. And we're almost caught up with our podcast queue. So pretty soon, all of those will be there. So please continue to send in suggestions for things for us to review. And of course, continue to add your comments. And I promise spam will not get you again, because I won't let it any more than I'll let zombies get you. So I promise. Upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
See ya.
The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Bravo!
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!